And I think that that is going to happen, as difficult as it might be.
Well, we shall see. We'll come back to you. I see no signs of life in either Labour or the Conservatives at the moment in getting even above 20%. I've never known them to fall below 20%. Anyway, we'll have to leave you there. We've run out of time. I apologise for that technical glitch earlier. It curtailed the time, so I hope you'll both come back and give me some more of your valuable time in another show. That's it for me today. I'll be back on Budget Day for a special show with Joe Coburn. How about that? How could you miss it? Next week on The Times at One, it's Stephen Sacker. But up next on Times Radio, Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
It is a good tune, that, isn't it? It's worth hearing in full. Good afternoon, 2 o'clock. This is Jane Garvey and Fee Glover here on Times Radio until four.
I can't wait till the Christmas version comes
our way. Oh, yes, won't be long.
It's definitely the sign that the festive season is upon us. Coming up on the programme today, all the latest on the hunt for the Algerian prisoner mistakenly released from Wandsworth. Times Radio has this exclusive investigation on scams in the driving test industry. We'll talk about why we fall for fraudsters. Could a broken spine be overcome with the help of an implant in your brain? We're going to talk to a woman taking part in a pioneering new treatment. And our big interview is with Lady Glenconner, former lady-in-waiting to Princess Margaret, on her latest book, which is called Manners and Mischief.
Here's the news at two. Andy Hayes.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. Surrey police says one of two men mistakenly released from jail has handed himself in. Billy Smith was wrongly let go from Wandsworth prison earlier this week, sparking a three-day manhunt. He's been pictured grinning as he arrived back. The search for sex offender Brahim Kador Sharif continues. Former head of security at Wandsworth, Ian Atchison, has told Times Radio the probation service is on its knees.
So it's no surprise that the numbers of releases in error have taken the sharpest uptick in years. After Labour came to power and decided that the way to solve the gridlock inside the prison system was the emergency mass release of prisoners. You know, those measures were brought in extremely quickly. What we now can see is they were very poorly designed.
The Bank of England has held the base rate of interest at 4%. Experts think there could be a cut before the end of the year once the impact of the forthcoming budget is clearer. Governor Andrew Bailey has set out his economic forecast.
Headline inflation was 3.8% in August and in September. We expect this to be the peak. Underlying price and wage pressures have continued to ease. We expect headline inflation to fall to close to 3% by early next year before gradually returning to the 2% target.
Four schools close to Villa Park will close early today ahead of Aston Villa's Europa League game against Israeli side Maccabi Tel Aviv. No away fans will attend the match after it was declared high risk by local officials. Ian Austin is a former Labour MP and trade envoy to Israel. He's also the son of a Jewish refugee and an Aston Villa season ticket holder. He's told Times Radio he's extremely concerned.
People have been out overnight putting up signs saying Zionists not welcome. I think it's an appalling situation when this is supposed to be a football match. What sort of country are we where people are being banned because of their nationality or their race? I think it illustrates some really worrying themes. I think it's clearly a big problem with extremism and anti-Semitism in the area, a big problem with sectarian politics.
A man's been jailed for at least 26 years for the murder of a Good Samaritan who'd stopped to help a woman injured in a brawl at a wedding. Chris Marriott died when Hassan Jangir drove his car into the crowd in Sheffield in 2023. There was a record number of referrals to the Prevent Anti-Extremism scheme in the year to March. Almost 8,800 were made, up 27% on the year before. More than a third were children aged 11 to 15. And the father of the Southport killer has said the attack would not have happened if he'd told the police his son had bought a machete. Alphonse Ruda-Cabana says the weapon was delivered in June 2023, a year before his son went on to target girls at a dance class. He's told an inquiry it's something he regrets. And for a roundup of the news on demand, subscribe to the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB, online, and on your smart speaker. Jane Garvey and Feed Lover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms.
A very good afternoon. It is 4 minutes past two. Feed Lover, Jane Garvey with you until 4 o'clock. Welcome to Thursday afternoon. Are you all wearing your poppies? Because we really can't start until we know that you are. Today on the programme, we've got a very wide range of stuff for you. We're going to start with this superb investigation done by our colleagues here at Times Towers into driving test scams. If you haven't heard the results of their investigations, it is really superb. Superb journalism, and it's such a scam that's been doing the rounds. People who promise that they can get you through your driving test, you're ending up paying up to three or four times the amount of money that you should have paid in the first place. And obviously people who claim that they can get you to jump the queue, because it's pretty difficult, certainly in many cities, to even find a slot for your driving test. So you'll want to be across that. Also, we're asking some other questions this afternoon. Have you embraced the second-hand book market? Pandora Sykes is here to tell us why you should. A good news story for you at last. It's about how technology has enabled a young woman to walk again. After 3 o'clock, to mark your cards, we are expecting to hear a little bit more from the Justice Secretary about escaped and recaptured prisoners. Jane Mulcairns will pop in to talk us through the Saturday Times magazine. There's a big piece in the mag by Hilary Rose detailing the life and times of Sarah Ferguson, and some of the figures involved in the balance sheet across her life are really, really mind-boggling.
She was no stranger to... she just spent like...
she had an Elton John-sized floristry habit at one stage. You know, 50 grand a year was going on fresh-cut flowers. But just the list of staff involved in keeping her life and Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor's show on the road. And some people would say, well, there wasn't an awful lot that was showing on the road, actually, you know, when they were... supposedly working royals.
Well, Elton sustained his flower habit with being on the road
and doing a lot of touring,
creating loads of hit
songs. You're absolutely right, and going back and making sure that everybody across the world could hear them. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And after 3:30, a real, real cracker of a guest.
Well, I hope so. It's a kind of annual treat, actually. It is Lady Glenconner, who has taken to writing late in life. She'd say that herself. Indeed, she does say it. She was 87 when her first book came out, Lady in Waiting. She's 93 now. Did you see her, Fee, when she came in this morning? She does. She looks, and I'm being just completely honest, she looks about 70.
Yes. And it is commented on
quite
by
remarkable.
Everybody that she meets.
Yeah.
I think she's got that very rare, old-fashioned, mannered glamour about her and charisma. So she doesn't leave a room without people knowing that she has been there.
Yeah, she's got a real twinkle and lots of stories to tell. And her new book is Manners and Mischief, an A to Z of a life lived well. And if you do know anything about her life, you will know she's known absolutely dreadful, dreadful tragedy. Two of her five children have died. Another suffered an absolutely horrific accident. And her husband was a man called Colin Tennant. He was known really for that island he bought, Mustique, and he gave a plot of land to Princess Margaret and she built a house there. And Lady Glenconner was Princess Anne's lady-in-waiting, Princess Margaret's lady-in-waiting, do apologise, get my royals right. So lots of stories to tell, but Colin Tennant was, he was violent. He was an extraordinarily difficult man. And now Lady Glenconner is living her dream. She is very much the centre of her life, able to tell the truth about what happened to her, and someone who's very passionate about helping other people who are victims of domestic violence. So she's a really brilliant and impressive woman, and you can hear from her after 3:30.
An all-round good egg. I'm just going to furnish you with some tiny details ahead of our conversation that we will have with Jane Mulcairns about this piece on Sarah Ferguson. And this is according to Andrew Lowney, who's written the book about the fall of the House of York. Sarah Ferguson spent £25,000 in 1 hour at Bloomingdale's.
took up to 9 holidays a year, employed a full-time staff including a cook, driver, maid, butler, dresser, nanny, 3 secretaries, a PA, 2 gardeners, a flower arranger and a dog walker. At one point, she owed £51,000 to Selfridges. She variously owed £5,000 to a complimentary therapist, £65,000 to a personal trainer and £500 to the local newsagent. A Saudi prince once recalled that he sat next to her at dinner, asked if there was anything that he could do to help her. As a matter of fact, you could pay off my overdraft, she replied. Well, that's small talk for you.
Wow, I mean, it's just... Selfridges could probably take it. But, you know, I really do feel for the newsagent. It's outrageous.
Yeah, and actually the personal trainer too.
That's 100%.
Somebody's 3 years of the average salary in this country not paid by one person.
No, it's horrible.
The most read stories on the Times website this afternoon. Number 3, celebrity traitors winner revealed after streaming slip. Fans in New Zealand and Canada were shown the last episode of the BBC show early, leading to spoilers on social media, but not in the Times article if you want to read all about that. The second most read story, David Lammy sees red. Shame it wasn't on his lapel. That is the Times' parliamentary sketch of the Justice Secretary's agonising outing yesterday. And we are expecting to hear from David Lammy on the mistaken release of prisoners sometime this afternoon. And the most read piece on the Times website, prisoner mistakenly released from Wandsworth gives himself up. This is 35-year-old fraudster Billy Smith handing himself into police 3 days after being freed in error, and we will talk about the hunt for the other missing prisoner soon. You can read all of those articles on thetimes.com. You do need your digital subscription. If you don't have one, get one. Yeah. Go to thetimes.com/subscribe.
I was just looking at some of those images of William Smith handing himself back in. I mean, it has to be said.
He's jaunty about
He's chirpy.
He's bounced up the steps.
Yeah.
Waved to the waiting crowd.
Gave a wave.
Back in he goes.
Oh, dear. What a time to be alive. 0333 003 2353 is the WhatsApp number. Do get involved this afternoon. Now, the struggle to get a driving test slot is familiar to anyone who's done exactly that lately. The shortages are giving fraudsters something of a golden opportunity. Times Radio's investigated scammers offering fake tests and claiming they'll look the other way to guarantee a pass. Times Radio reporter Emma Cohen spoke to Manveen Rana for the Story podcast.
He says, well, for like £560, I know a guy who can look the other way.
He takes some bribe. By taking some bribe, he passed people. If you want, I can, you know, talk to him about your matter if you need these kind of services. But he charged like £562, including booking.
As long as you don't hit someone when you're driving, he'll pass your test.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe what he was saying.
That's not just profiteering off a test slot. That's proper corruption.
That's exactly where my head went. And I just said, I'm not going to get into trouble for this, am I?
I'm not going to go to jail, am I, if I, like, give a bit of extra money?
No, come on. Why you are talking like that? You're going to go to jail?
And he actually laughs. He's like, well, of course not. Why would you go to jail? We're doing this all the time.
Emma Cohen, Times Radio reporter. Don't forget to listen to that edition of the Story podcast, by the way. Victoria Baines is an expert in online trust, safety and cybersecurity. She is a visiting fellow at Bournemouth University. Are you aware of this particular scam, Victoria? Scams are your business, I guess.
Yes, although I'd like to say I'm involved in investigating them and countering them, not conducting them.
No, you haven't got your own business.
Just in case somebody shows up at the door. Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is actually something of a double whammy, because we've been aware for the last few years of fraudsters using bots, you know, using AI to block book tests, just as, for instance, people get Glastonbury tickets or, you know, ticket touts for concerts and events. And back in 2023, the then Conservative government actually issued a statement about this and said, look, we're trying our best to tighten security measures. But it had unintended consequences. The security measures actually blocked some legitimate users from booking their tests. So as your colleagues who investigated this particular scam pointed out, you know, this goes back all the way to backlogs generated by COVID in terms of the tests. But what's happened more recently and what's been investigated by your colleagues has been scammers who can then see that not only can they profit by block booking all of these tests and reselling them at an inflated rate, but actually you don't really need to deliver on that. You can just pretend that you're delivering this and charge money and scam them that way as well.
In a way, there's nowhere for your customer, in speech marks, to go, is there?
Exactly. It's a little bit like if you decide that you are going to buy your medication on the internet. You're going to go on the dark web to find something that either you can't get in time or that you're otherwise not allowed to buy. You put yourself in a really unsafe space by doing that. It's a completely understandable human reaction to want to deal, you know, to want to get a workaround in this way. But it means that you no longer have the safeguards that you would normally have if, in this case, for instance, you just sat on the DVSA website and booked the official test the official way.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from people in my own family who need to book tests that you basically have to set your alarm and be there as soon as the whole thing becomes available. And then it's your task for the day to secure a test. So there's no doubt there isn't a problem here. And I guess the more desperate people are, the more likely they are to fall for something like this.
That's right. And look, there's three different vulnerabilities here and there's three different things that we can do about it. So in the first place, we mentioned that the opportunity has arisen for scammers to act in this way. You know, as soon as the capacity problem is dealt with in terms of booking these tests, then the opportunity goes away. It's no longer lucrative for people if you can book your test via the legitimate means. But as your colleagues also found, a lot of these scams are being propagated through social media. So it's also on the social media companies to make sure that they are not facilitating fraudulent activity by the resellers and then targeted scams as well. And that's really about finding those posts that make the promises in various groups about shortening the time, getting people to pass quicker. Right. But then it's also about the government tightening the security on the website, you know, as we mentioned, and to prevent the bots from being able to make these block bookings, because it's people not being able to get on the legitimate website that's also facilitating the problem. Until we deal with all of those, really, people remain quite vulnerable. But, you know, the advice is, as it always is, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. And we need to be vigilant because people prey on the kind of common cyber criminal tactics are that they will try and give you something that you want, that you really, really want. They will try and make you afraid of something. And equally, they'll make it time limited. They'll say, this is urgent. This is only available for the next 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that panics you into a situation. So it really is about stopping and thinking and taking that calm moment to reflect about whether you could be putting yourself at risk.
They're a nasty breed of individual, aren't they, these people?
They are. And do you know what? They are massively opportunistic. I've been researching in this area for a good 20 years, and I hate to say it, but I am always constantly impressed by how much ingenuity they have. I remember back in 2009 when Michael Jackson died. All of a sudden, a load of fake news stories popped up on the web, because this was before the days when we had, you know, mass fake news on social media. And all it was driving people's traffic to read the news stories. But actually, it was taking them to a site where they downloaded a virus. And equally, if we think about all of those COVID scams related to, you know, where you could buy masks, where you could get tests, where you could get antiviral drugs, you know, criminals read the news. And they see where the problems are. And if they can make a swift buck, they will do.
Are there any seasonal scams doing the rounds right now that people need to be aware of?
Oh, yes. It tends to be for some of the hot trending items, particularly, you know, retail, cosmetics, that kind of things. I haven't seen anything specific in relation to this, but, you know, those, I hate to say it, those awful Labubu dolls that everybody wants. Of course, there are lots of counterfeit versions of those, you know, so that takes us into auction scams, you know, retail sites like eBay and other places like that, Facebook Marketplace. So, you know, we talk about cybersecurity being something very specific and somehow virtual and unreal. But ultimately, a lot of it is to do with the kinds of scams that we're talking about today, that your colleagues have been investigating, where, yes, you're handing over money over the internet, or you may be contacting somebody over the internet, but it's really about fraud to do with physical items, counterfeits, or people pretending to provide real world services that they can't actually provide.
What about, I remember I got it a couple of times actually, the heating allowance link that you had to click on. It was sent, I'm assuming, to people over a certain age, making people realise that they had to click on a link or they wouldn't get it, which simply isn't true. But you do, if you happen to be looking at your phone first thing in the morning, you are very vulnerable in those moments, aren't you? It's so easy to part with your money.
First thing in the morning, or if you're in a rush on the way to work, or, you know, dare I say it, if you've had a few drinks, if you're a little bit emotionally vulnerable, you know, I'm not saying that anybody's being stupid. There are times where we're in a rush or we're vulnerable. But yes, I mean, actually, you know, it's probably not as targeted as you might think. I know we always assume that people are listening to our microphones and listening to our conversations. Scammers, and particularly these kinds of phishing scams that you've just mentioned, they work precisely on the basis that they will just go out to everybody,
right,
in the hope that they may apply to somebody. So yesterday I got one related to car finance, which I may have been missold, allegedly. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't drive, so that doesn't apply to me.
Well, you can relax. Yeah.
You know, we all get emails from claiming to be from Tinder, saying that we've got a match on our dating profile. Well, that sounds brilliant, doesn't it? But it only takes a second to think, well, actually, I'm not on that site, so why would I have got this kind of notification? It is unfortunately about, you know, suspending our need to be popular, to get money. We've just got to take that little moment to stop and think. But I absolutely agree with you. Sometimes it's harder than it is at others.
Really appreciate your advice. Thank you very much. Victoria Baines, an expert in online trust, safety and cybersecurity.
So lots of messages. Thank you for all of them so far this afternoon. We are 0333 003 2353. Paul in Edinburgh says, good investigation on the driving test. That said, the clip you played showed that the scammer was open in that it was dodgy and he'd look the other way. And if that's the case, I've got little sympathy with the victims who are actually partly to blame. Well, it was just one part of the investigation. Another part of it revealed this scam where the fraudsters are taking the identity of a well-respected and legitimate instructor and using that to lure people into believing that they can pay extra in order to get the test passed. So there are various elements to the scam, and it is well worth going to our YouTube channel and digging around a little bit more to find out. This one comes in from Ian, who says, yes, wearing the poppy prominently and proudly. I'm so grateful to all of our heroes who've given us all of our freedom. It's reassuring to see so many poppy wearers going out and about, and I'm very grateful to be going to Southend Pier this Saturday to take in the magnitude of all of the poppies on the world's longest pier. It has made me very reflective as to what actually matters yet again. So there are up to 100,000 poppies being displayed on the mile-long circumference of Southend Pier, knitted, crocheted, all made by volunteers.
It's great, it's a great idea.
What an amazing sight to see. It is 20 minutes past two. How much are all your old books worth? Vinted say they've got a very surprising answer. We'll do that next. This is Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wickes, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Henry Bonsu on Times Radio. Trusted journalism.
What about the government's approach here? Is this the kind of thing we need at scale?
The latest breaking news, expert analysis and well-informed discussion.
Was that the tactic to keep the language as vague as possible until you really had to sharpen it?
And diverse opinion.
For any country to develop in the 21st century, there has to be education of the vast majority of the population.
Henry Bonsu, tonight from 10 on Times Radio.
They're bubbly, they're fuzzy, and they're ruddy delicious!
At Oddbox, we rescue farm fresh fruit and veg that's too odd for supermarkets. Then we deliver direct to your door, so every box and every crunch makes a difference to growers and the planet. Use the code RADIO to get 50% off your first box at oddbox.co.uk and help fight food waste, one curvy cucumber at a time. Offer excludes delivery fees. Conditions apply.
Ancestry is marking remembrance with free access to global wartime records until Wednesday. Immerse yourself in your ancestors' wartime experiences from the home front to the front line. Explore military records and historic photos and uncover stories of courage and resilience. Register with just your name and email at ancestry.co.uk to start searching with no payment needed. Honour their legacy today with Ancestry. Free access ends the 12th of November.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/UK/AI for people.
Download the free Times Radio app from the App Store or Google Play today.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms. Ready to start your next home project? This autumn at Wickes, there are great kitchen and bathroom offers available. Explore the ranges at wickes.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wickes store.
Now, we know that many of you are very interested in American politics. News this afternoon that Nancy Pelosi will not seek re-election in 2026. With a grateful heart, I look forward to my final year of service as your proud representative, she said in a video message to San Francisco voters, interlaced with sweeping imagery of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh. Very moving.
Very nice touch. Yes. We might talk a little bit more about her contribution to politics.
Yeah.
First female Speaker of the House. Amazing to still be in her job at 85.
Some would say 85 is too old to be in a job like that, of course. Just balancing it out.
I think she was one of the more sprightly of the octogenarians on display, Jane.
Oh, OK. She was also the woman who apparently said to Joe Biden, nah, you can't do it. Now, whether that was the right decision or not, we're not certain. But nevertheless, she managed to get the message across to Mr. B.
We will talk more about that.
Just how we've ended up with Mr. T.
After the news. First, though, we know that you can find exceptional pre-loved clothes on sites like Vinted, eBay and Depop. Who hasn't spent at least an hour late at night chasing down the perfect grey Marl V-neck jumper? But would you think of going to a second-hand site for books in the same way? Well, a lot of us are. The UK second-hand book market is now valued at, and I find this astonishing, $1.34 billion. It's according to Vinted, and it's growing. But if we all buy second-hand, what does that do to all author's royalties? And do you simply love the smell of a fresh book so much that you can't go pre-loved? Here is Pandora Sykes, who is Vinted's UK books creator. What a fantastic job title, Pandora. What does that mean that you do for them?
Well, I'm a curator, not a creator. I like the idea that I would create the whole secondhand books market. It means it's an ambassador role, mainly, just trying to really raise awareness of how brilliant it is for secondhand books and how secondhand books are filling such a gap in the market now. A lot of libraries are shutting down. You know, one fifth of libraries in the UK have closed since 2008. And at the same time, hardbacks are now £20, sometimes in excess of £20 when they're new. So that's not a particularly realistic approach for a lot of people. But I think what most people are doing are combining. You know, they're buying some books new that they're really excited about reading. And then they're picking up older books or books that have been out for a long time, maybe a classic they never got round to reading. That's what I've been doing a lot of. That's where they're going for secondhand.
Sure. I found this figure astonishing, though, about how much the UK secondhand book market is worth. Do you have any extra information that you could add to that figure? Because it just seems like a lot. I'd be surprised if the new book market is worth over £1 billion.
I'm not a finance gal. So I must say, I don't know how much the new books market is worth without Googling.
Sure.
But I don't know. I mean, yes, billions mean very little to me, but does it surprise me? I mean, it's growing. I think it's growing 6% year on year.
Which is fantastic, isn't it? Because as you've mentioned, there are so many things that are against us reading. And also there is the simple fact that our kids and younger generations just aren't reading as much as we did at their age.
No, it's true. People are reading, I think, less than ever before, which is so interesting to me because I find, you know, I write a newsletter about books and I interview authors and I find people to be more engaged than ever with books. But of course, you know, I'm operating from a position where people coming to those talks or commenting on, you know, newsletters are people who can afford to buy books. I think lots of people can't. But I also think it's more an awareness thing. I think lots of people don't know, you know, when we think of secondhand books, we think of charity shops. And charity shops are amazing. I love charity shops, but they don't necessarily have the best selection of books. Certainly they won't have books that everyone is talking about very often. And what I think is great for Vinted is I recently discovered the author Lily King. I'm really behind because she's, you know, critically acclaimed, especially in the States. And I read one of her new books that I got in hardback. And then I hopped onto Vinted and I bought her back catalogue. So it's quite trend driven, Vinted, which is also really handy for books because quite understandably, lots of people, I mean, I did actually read Anna Karenina this year, but I don't think necessarily people are wanting to just read like Tolstoy or Dostoevsky, which is often, you know, when you say secondhand books in some sort of tiny charity shop, that's often what you're faced with, are those classics that are there because nobody actually really wants to read 800 pages of.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, in a charity shop, it's so hit and miss whether you come across something that intrigues you. But I suppose the joy of Vinted as well is your power as the customer to do a search and to have available to you such a vast array of books.
What I love as well is they've got this bundle option. So you can buy, you know, lots of books and it'll all come in the same order with the same postage. I bought, and I sort of won't shut up about this because I thought it was so great. I bought 20 Jacqueline Wilsons for my daughter in one bundle for £8, which was just such a bargain. And I'm like eking them out. She doesn't know why I've got 20. I think she's only had about six.
Are you saying she doesn't listen to this programme, Pandora? How could
that possibly she might be listening to it at school. You're absolutely
no,
right.
No, she won't be at all, nor should she be. One final thought. Is it also about not feeling that once you buy a book, it's an ornament and it is yours for life as something that you have used? I think there has been a thing, hasn't there, where there's a certain kind of prestige about having very well-lined bookshelves in your home. And I think that belongs to our generation. I don't feel that younger generations care that much.
I love the controversy around this. I don't know if you remember that there was a what was he called? Gwyneth Paltrow had this man called Thatcher Wine, who she paid, I know that was his actual name, who she paid to buy a whole library for her, to, you know, so that they looked good. And it turned out that lots of celebrities were doing this. And one of them even admitted that she'd never picked up a single book. And then, of course, there were people being like, oh, it's disgusting to have this many books. I do have a lot of books, but I don't keep hold of books. Yes, it's like the Mein Kampf debate. Yeah. Would you have Mein Kampf on your bookshelf? I don't have Mein Kampf on my bookshelf. But I like to keep hold of books unless I really don't think they're very good because I lend books out all the time. I sort of function as a library and I want to keep them for my children. But I actually prefer secondhand books. I find new books, they all have these neon covers, which I find really, they just look quite full on your bookshelves, whereas old ones are a bit more sedate. And I like that I often find other people's shopping lists in them.
Oh, I'm so with you, Pandora. And sometimes the inscription at the front of a book, you know, when somebody has given that book
to somebody else, and, you know, there's a thoughtful little message. You're buying a little piece of social history at the same time, aren't you? We're out of time, Pandora, but lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. And also, just the anecdote about Thatcher wine is going to stay with me for some time.
I'm going to get myself a Thatcher wine. Is she still there? Pandora, just really briefly.
I'm still there. Google
Yeah, Lily King, which book should I start with?
Her newest one, Heart the Lover.
Thank you. Oof,
terrible title.
Yes, it's not the great title, but I'll take your recommendation. Thank you very much.
Heart the Lover.
Yes.
Okay. Right, coming up 14 years after an injury left her paralysed, we'll hear from a woman who's just taken her first steps. We're late to the news. Our apologies. It is 32 minutes past two.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Thank you, Fee. Good afternoon. This is Andy Hayes with the headlines. Surrey Police says one of two men mistakenly released from jail has now handed himself in. Billy Smith was wrongly let go from Wandsworth Prison earlier this week, sparking a three-day manhunt. He's been pictured grinning as he arrived back. The search for sex offender Brahim Kadour Sharif continues. More details on him from Times policy editor Oliver Wright.
He is said to have been a visa overstayer, so he came into the country legitimately but overstayed his visa. He has a number of convictions, and he was also facing trial for a number of other convictions which hadn't yet come to court. This was not someone who really didn't have a track record of criminal offences. He absolutely did.
21 people have been arrested after police were attacked with fireworks in Birmingham. In addition, a number of weapons were seized during bonfire night celebrations in the city centre. Those involved were aged between 14 and 25 and remain in custody. Meanwhile, a 14-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of arson in Highton on Merseyside after emergency services were targeted there. And four schools close to Villa Park will close early today ahead of Aston Villa's Europa League game against Israeli side Maccabi Tel Aviv. No away fans will attend the match after it was declared high risk by local officials. Finally, the British Army has a new armoured fighting vehicle weighing more than 40 tonnes. The £10 million Ajax could be deployed to Ukraine in the event of a peace deal. And for a roundup of the news on demand, find the Times News briefing on the Times Radio app.
This is Times Radio. When you run a small business, you know it's important to keep an eye on your costs. And a smart meter can help. Barry Henderson is the owner of Henderson's Restaurant in Edinburgh and has been using his smart meter as part of his efforts to waste less energy and be more sustainable.
The smart meter definitely has made us more conscious of our energy use, and we can modify our operation to help just be more efficient. As a vegetarian business, lots of our staff are vegetarian and very environmentally conscious, so using energy efficiently is definitely a key core value for us. It's definitely helped us save money, and it's also helped us be more sustainable, able to focus on where we're using electricity and become more efficient. I genuinely do recommend smart meters to other businesses. Like, I think it just gives you a more accurate picture of how you're using electricity and energy.
To find out more, search Get a Smart Meter for Business. Eligibility may vary.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier, all built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/UK/AI for people.
Get the day's politics, business and sport every weekday in Breakfast from 6:30 a.m.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in bathroom design and installation. Transform your bathroom. Book a free home visit and measure, and then let the Wix design experts help you choose from thousands of products. Book a free bathroom design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Now, John Pienaar takes over from us at 4 o'clock this afternoon. He'll have another action-packed show for you. Doesn't finish till seven, so plenty of time for him to pack in all the best political analysis of the day. And here he is. John, what have you got?
Hello. I mean, the row over yet another prisoner being released by mistake. I mean,
David Lammy, could he have handled this any worse? I mean, yesterday, I think it was just, it's a presentational, and on that level, a political disaster. I mean, ducking all the questions. He'd have done better just repeating his answers from Mastermind. He just said Marie Antoinette over and over again, instead of completely ducking it and then refusing to give a statement when the Speaker asked him.
Have you put yourself through the hell of watching his appearance on Mastermind?
I have seen it played back, actually, more than once.
Yeah.
It does make your blood run cold.
But does it? I don't know. Have you done Mastermind?
I have.
Okay, how did you get on?
I won.
Well done. That's the end of that. I told you.
No, so,
I just wondered what it was like in that
chair. I did it twice, actually. I came second.
It's tough, though, isn't
it? Anyway, yeah, but it's not easy. It's nerve-wracking. But watching it also makes your blood run cold, because you think it is not, you can imagine, being in that position. But still, in the House of Commons, that was really, really, really poor. And that was a political failure. And so I'm going to be talking about David Lammy dealing with that so dreadfully badly, and is there any sort of retrieving the situation? Because the bigger question is the state of the prisons. And there is the question, look, whoever can complain about the state of our prisons, which is just about everyone except Robert Jenrick, say, or Conservatives, who handed over a bin fire of a prison system. So I'm looking at the system. I'm talking to Robert Buckland, a former Justice Secretary. I'm talking to a former governor of Brixton Prison, and other stories through the show, including this, would you call it a trend of people cloning their late pets?
Yes. Bizarre.
Yeah. Tom Brady, the football former star, and he's cloned his late dog.
You've got a dog.
You know, I love Nelson very much. It would never occur to me to clone him.
No, I just think you don't get the same soul. You get everything else, but you don't get the same soul.
It's not your dog, is it?
No, it's not.
Anyway, we're talking about that enormous moral dilemma.
Mm. I don't like it, John. No, I don't like it either. I would never have believed that animals could have different personalities until I had, as you know, two cats. And they just couldn't be more different. So you can't. No, you can't. It's impossible. But I might have you cloned, just to keep the whole thing going, ticking along.
I might clone myself so then I can stay at home.
Oh, right. Bitter words. It's almost 3:20. Now, for most of us, walking, well, it's just something we do. It's an extension of thinking, I suppose. The neurons in our brain fire and signals travel through our body, down our spine, and then our muscles move. We just don't give it any thought, although, of course, there are plenty of thoughts involved. Now, if you break your spine, then that link is stopped. But an experimental treatment in Switzerland is using implants in the back and brain to help some people walk again. And we can talk now to somebody who's being treated. It's Suzanne Edwards. Suzanne, welcome to the programme. Good afternoon. I understand you're talking to us from the United States.
Yes, I am. I'm currently in Washington. But right. Hi. Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me on.
It's a great pleasure. So you're in Washington on business, which is encouraging in itself, I guess. Can you just tell us a little bit about what happened to you? I think it was some years ago now, 11 years ago?
It was 14 years ago, actually.
Right.
In my early 20s, I was taking a break. I'd finished my degree. I did an economics degree at Exeter, and I was having a year off. I was very into surfing. I was living in Cornwall, and then I headed out to Morocco, and I was working in a surf camp. And then one evening, I was standing on the roof terrace just looking out to sea, and then the railing of the roof terrace gave way, and I fell forward over the roof terrace, railing, and fell about 20 feet, landed quite badly on my back, and broke my spine, and was instantly paralyzed from kind of belly button, like mid thoracic downwards.
And can I ask how long were you in hospital for?
So I was in hospital in Morocco for about a day and a half, and then I was flown back on a medical jet back to the UK, which was a relief. And then I had surgery a couple of days later, and I was transferred to a specialist spinal unit in North London, Stanmore, the Royal National Orthopaedic Hospital. And then I spent 3 months there recovering from surgery. And then you have this sort of rehab phase where you relearn, how to shower, how to get changed, how to push yourself around in a wheelchair, all those sorts of things. So you get accustomed to your new life, and then you get sent on your way.
And what were you told about the chances of any kind of mobility in the future?
So I have a complete spinal cord injury, so you can either have an incomplete or a complete. Incomplete means that there are some residual nerves and messages that are still getting through from your brain to below your level of injury. A complete injury means that there are no messages getting through. So I have a complete sensory and motor injury. So I can't feel anything below my level of injury, and I can't move anything below my level of injury. So, you know, it's not a fun conversation to have. I'm sure it's not fun for the consultant. It's also really not fun as the recipient of that news that, you know, that's it. As I said, I was 22, 23. And I was told, you know, this is it. You will never walk again. You know, this is your new life. And I was incredibly sporty, very active. I spent almost every day on the beach. And I'm also incredibly stubborn. So I didn't really believe them. I was like, oh, I'm sure I'll be fine. I'm sure I'll get better. That was not my finest moment.
Well, I wouldn't dream of criticising your reaction to that at that point in your life or any point in your life. Do you think your stubborn personality has played a part in your suitability for what is this experimental treatment?
Quite possibly, yes. I've always been... I'm one of four girls. My parents have got, four daughters, and I'm the youngest. And so I think I've always been quite kind of competitive, stubborn, and sort of determined to, you know, find my own path. And I think possibly that has helped. I very much have wanted to just kind of just like figure out my own way and what I want to do. And so when this came along, or when I have my injury, I was like, oh, I'm going to get better. I can do this. I can do a rehab and I can figure things out. And, you know, that didn't really happen that way. And so I think when this trial came along, I was like, yeah, this is something I can get stuck into. This is something I think I'm well suited to. And thankfully they agreed. So, yeah, I do think possibly my stubbornness has helped.
So this is Neuro Restore, and you go to Switzerland to be treated. Is that right?
Yes. So I've always been familiar with NeuroRestore and some of the studies they've done in the past. I think they're leading the way when it comes to this. They're incredibly well established, and Gregoire and Jocelyn, who lead the charge there, are phenomenal, very, very well respected people in the field of spinal cord injury and neurology. So I've always been very familiar with the work there, and I think I must have been signed up to kind of some kind of database with them and because I've always kept an eye on clinical trials. And so this kind of came my way last summer. They first reached out to me wanting to know a bit more about me. And I met them and decided I wanted to be part of this trial. And so I had to have testing. So that happened earlier this year to see if I was actually eligible, like a medical fit for this. There's a huge exclusion criteria. So a lot of people, if they have a spinal cord injury, wouldn't actually be the right fit for this. But thankfully I was. And so I headed out there in March. I had my surgery in March. And what are we now? November. So yeah, it's all happened quite quickly.
In layperson's terms then, what happens?
Yeah, so I'm glad I can explain it in layperson's terms because I'm not one of the engineers. They explain it very, very smartly. So I have something implanted into my brain, and that basically decodes my brain intentions to do, we'll just keep it simple with walking, to do a left step and a right step. So I have to think left step, right step. And for me, the strategy I use is I'm trying to pick up my foot. So we sort of played around of, is it picking up your hip, your knee? Turns out it works best for me. I'm trying to pick up my foot. So I think about doing that movement. And then I have a little antenna that sits in a hat, and that can read my intention for left and right step. I also have a separate thing that is implanted just below the level of injury in my spine. And that kind of sits, it's got electrodes that sit over the nerves that control all my leg muscles, my trunk muscles. And that can, we can deliver stimulation to that through this little thing that's implanted in my tummy, and it receives a signal, and that transfers it to my nerve roots in my lower back. So basically what happens is when I think left step, for instance, the computer picks up that intention that I want to do a left step. We have figured out separately which muscles need to contract to do that left step. And that stimulation is delivered to the lead in my lower back, and it makes the right muscles contract. It makes the right leg stay extended, because obviously you need your right leg extended while your left leg takes a step. All that happens very quickly, sort of less than a second.
Right.
So yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah, it still seems to require intellectual input from you. You've got to be involved in this to an extent that most of us, because we move around instinctively, we just couldn't do this.
Yeah, it's one of those weird things, because obviously, like, I still have, the full use of my arm still, my injury is below that. So when I think, like, lift up my left arm, you know, it happens instinctively, as you said, whereas for my left leg, when I'm doing this walking, yeah, it is much more intentional. It's, as we've done this over time and as I've got better with it, it's less intentional. I don't have to think quite as hard necessarily. And, you know, the aim is that I can walk and talk and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's getting there.
We need to be honest. This is, and I'm sure you'd agree with me, this is not a cure, is it?
Correct. This is not a cure. And that is something that I am very clear about. You know, sitting here talking to you guys, I'm very much paralyzed. You know, I have not had any neurological recovery, but this is about the ability to restore function to paralyzed limbs. So I have to be connected. We've got to the stage now where I can walk without a body weight support harness, so I can walk, you know, independently with a walking frame. But, you know, I can only walk sort of 10 meters at a time. It's tiring. I then have to sit down. Someone obviously has to bring my wheelchair to me. So, you know, I'm kind of seeing this as a bit like learning a new sport, where it's kind of hard. I need to practice a lot. It's tiring, but it's getting easier. I'm getting better at it. And, you know, obviously as the technology develops, it can become faster. The devices can become smaller. And so it's so exciting just to be part of this journey with the NeuroRestore team.
Well, it's a great pleasure to speak to you and hear about it. Thank you very much, Suzanne. That is Suzanne Edwards. She's the second person to undergo NeuroRestore's experimental treatment. And if you want to know more, and I'm sure lots of you do after that, because there were lots more areas we could have gone into there, the Times Planet Hope podcast has got a new episode about her treatment, and you can find that wherever you get your podcasts.
It is so good to hear about the practical dynamics of, you know, some of these new technologies, isn't it? Because it just, I think, helps us to embrace both sides of...
Oh, there's so much doom and gloom, isn't
there? Yeah. Of, you know, our ever-changing technological world. But that's just such a game changer for people who have suffered paralysis. And also, don't you think, Jane, those stories are so important to hear? Because, you know, we might think, oh, okay, well, we're able-bodied people listening to somebody who's dealing with a disability. Well, that might be your situation today. And tomorrow, you'll be completely on the other side of that fence. So we all need to take note, don't we?
We really do.
We're going to have a sneak peek into this weekend's Times magazine in a moment with Associate Editor Jane Mulkerins. Thank you for all of your messages about books. We will get to those too. You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. Book your free design appointment. Don't worry, it's not with us. It's from talented professionals at wix.co.uk.
Ed Vasey on Times Radio with Bupa Small Business Health Insurance. When it comes to must-listen mid-morning radio, we've got you covered. There's world-class journalism to broaden your mind, in-depth discussion that gets right to the heart of the issues, and entertaining conversation guaranteed to tickle your funny bone.
It really can be quite humorous. Get it?
Ed Vasey, tomorrow morning from 10 on Times Radio with Bupa Small Business Health Insurance. Let's get growing.
The Story, the award-winning daily news podcast from The Times. Listen in the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever wondered what power is? Power is transforming the sun into your own energy source. Power is getting energy companies to pay you. Power is enjoying your morning coffee, knowing you created the energy to make it. Well, you and the colossal ball of fire in the sky. Because with solar panels from Hive, the sun works for you. Hive, know your power. May not cover all electricity usage, roof and weather dependent. Paid for surplus requires eligible SET tariff.
I'm Adam Vaughan, Environment Editor at The Times. And in Planet Hope, we meet the people tackling our biggest environmental and scientific challenges. From saving penguins in Patagonia to helping people with paralysis to move again. These are stories of science, courage and hope. Follow Planet Hope wherever you get your podcasts. Planet Hope is brought to you by The Times in paid partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new, tariffs and taxes on anything and everything.
It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la, 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 I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Jane Mulcairn, as the associate editor at the Times magazine, joins us now to give us a sneak peek into the weekend's edition. I'm reading that. We welcome you to our studio, but it contained all of the essential information, didn't it, with the words in the right order. There is loads to talk about in the magazine this week. We are going to head to John Bon Jovi first, your cover star, My Radical Surgery to Save My Voice. Now, what a nightmare he found himself in.
Right. It's not great for a singer, is it? To have a yellow vocal cord when it's meant to be white.
Yeah.
It's quite bad. Do you worry about that?
Well, I think when any part of your body goes yellow, it's rarely a good sign.
Especially when it's the one you use most for work.
Yes. Yeah. I think we've got to stop there, hadn't we?
But you're right. So, very few things in the body are meant to be yellow. It's true. John Bon Jovi's on the cover this week. Frontman, of course, of Bon Jovi, which no also features in your new playlist on Off Air.
Yes.
Living on a Prayer. And Living on a Prayer is sort of part of the problem because he wrote himself a high C in Living on a Prayer when he was 25 years old. And as an older gentleman, apparently it's really hard to get a high C anyway, no matter who you are or how old you are. But he was doing that for many, many years. And then in 2015, he found it's just a bit harder. Singing just got a bit harder and he was a bit tired. Thought it was maybe just getting old. And then the specialist looked at his vocal cords. And they were yellow and kind of sort of pushed apart a bit. So he considered first of all, he just carried on and thought, I'll be fine. And then had some surgery. The same surgeon who had done Shania Twain, so good pedigree. Mm. But he's taken a long time to recover. He thought he'd be touring last year. And he's just about to tour now. Mm. Takes a long recovery. And it was a brilliant interview by Will Pavia, which is both dramatic and also very entertaining because it's Will Pavia. And his description of John Bon Jovi's biceps are as plump as a pair of roast chickens in the sleeves of his grey T-shirt.
Well, he does look good.
He looks all right, doesn't he? Yeah. I mean, the hair is... I don't know. How do you feel about the hair?
Well, I mean, I never liked it when it was in its bouffant infancy. No. So actually, I don't mind it now.
It's better, isn't
it? It's calmed down.
It's better.
I mean, there's a
Would you give him a short back and sides?
I don't think I should do that. My hair cutting skills were tested to their limits during the pandemic with photographic evidence to prove it, and I should never be allowed
matching
back
bowl
there
cuts
again.
For all.
Oh, it's absolutely dreadful.
Anyway, it's a great interview, and whether or not you're a fan of Bon Jovi and their I mean, I think they have obviously, they've been performing together for 40 years.
And it's such a thing, isn't it? When you go and see old rockers or older singers, your expectations are so incompatible with the age that they are.
Totally.
So you expect them to be able to do their back catalogue, to have the range in their voice, to have the strength in their voice. I mean, they really don't.
Well, unless you go and see the Rolling Stones. Who really can? Well,
can they?
Mick Jagger can, absolutely.
But does he still try and do all of the range.
Mm-hmm. And he runs around like a man half his age. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's impressive. Very impressive.
Right. Hard up, homeless and alone. What's next for Fergie? So this is a piece by the inimitable Hilary Rose on the self-inflicted disasters that brought her down time and time again. Do we want to entirely trash this woman's life? It's up to people how they want to take her life story. But what's amazing in this piece, Jane, is just the number of times that she gets herself into financial trouble and just expects somebody to bail her out. So she just sits down at a dinner party next to a Saudi prince, obviously thinks you're from Saudi Arabia, you're rich, I'm just going to ask you for money.
She asked Jeffrey Epstein for money. So I feel a little bit sorry for Fergie at points. And then you read this piece and you look at all of her spending, her endless spending, and you think, maybe I don't feel all that sorry for her. But you're right. There's a brilliant line in this about how she's at dinner next to a Saudi prince and, you know, she's giving him her woes. And he says, what can I do to help? And she says, you can pay off my overdraft. I mean, it's worth a try. I might try that at my next dinner.
But also, she just doesn't seem to have reined it in when she needed to rein it in.
No, I think that's the thing. I think you can be excused for one or two financial irregularities, but constantly, you know, over the course of your entire life. I mean, she obviously, there's something quite deep rooted there, isn't there?
Yes. I'm no psychologist, but yes.
Yeah, Shane Mulkerin's Freud there.
They both seem to be moths to the flame, don't they? Maybe that's the only way that we can put it at 3 minutes.
Very delicate.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, she was obviously aware, more than aware, of the public mood towards Jeffrey Epstein and continued to court his friendship and his financial backing. And that's not just being bad with money. You know, that's making a choice, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. Mm. We will see what happens next. A brief word, if we can, on Kate Clancy. I found this piece fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very different kind of a cancellation to talking about Andrew and Fergie. This is it's a really, really brilliant piece. And it's quite a complicated story, but it is well worth your time and attention reading it closely. So Kate Clancy is a teacher, poet, author, supporter of young people's poetry as well, and has written several books. And in the sort of depths of COVID, she was the subject of quite a nasty Twitter campaign against her, which basically ended up in her getting dropped by her publishers. And I mean, she was in a dark, dark place. She considered suicide. She was being roundly bullied from all sides, and not supported by the people who she thought would support her, you know, even though her students kind of came out in support of her. But her publishers really not only didn't support her, but hired a sort of PR company to manage the situation. What's really extraordinary, as I say, in this very complicated story, which is worth reading, but we haven't got time to go into all the details. What's really laughable is that she ended up being sent a lot of documents about it by the PR company, because she used some legislation that allows us all to ask for information. She was sent an awful lot of information, hired her own private investigators, and basically found out that, I mean, it's extraordinary. The number of people who were acting against her were very, very small, but kind of flamming things up. But also what's really laughable is that when she made it to meet her publishers, it emerged they'd never even read the book. They'd used sensitivity readers who had produced six different reports from different angles against her. I mean, I just find that, I don't want to be sort of, you know, it's PC gone mad, but the idea that your publishers wouldn't have read your book, they would have been told by sensitivity readers that there were issues there and hadn't read it themselves.
Yeah, she's got the apology, hasn't she? And that's a top line that we should remember.
She has got the apology. Yeah. And there is a podcast about it called Anatomy of a Cancellation, which is coming out, I think, later this week.
Jane, lovely to see you. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
3 o'clock, good afternoon. This is Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio until four. And in the next hour of the programme, the latest on the prisoner still at large. The other one, we should say, has now walked back into Wandsworth Prison. That is the fraudster William Smith. There will be more than 700 police at tonight's Europa League game between Aston Villa and Maccabi Tel Aviv. We'll discuss that. And our big guest, I think you'll enjoy this, it's after 3:30 this afternoon, Lady Anne Glenconner, Princess Margaret's former lady-in-waiting, on her latest book, Manners and Mischief, in which she tells us all about her speed awareness courses and exactly why multiple births are a bit common. And there's some serious stuff in there as well. Let's have the news at three. Andy Hayes.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. A convicted fraudster has been pictured grinning as he handed himself back in at Wandsworth Prison in southwest London. Billy Smith was wrongly let go earlier this week, sparking a three-day manhunt. The search for Algerian sex offender Brahim Kador Sharif continues, however, after he was released from the same prison last Wednesday. Tory leader Kemi Badenoch says it's a farcical situation.
What we have seen now is an explosion in accidental prisoner releases, many of them foreign criminals, many of them sex offenders. This should not be happening. We know that there will always be times when mistakes occur, but the scale at which it is happening is causing real worry. And what we saw yesterday with David Lammy unable to answer very simple questions was an embarrassment.
The Bank of England has held the base rate of interest at 4%. But experts think there could be a cut next month when the impact of the forthcoming budget will be clearer. Four of the nine committee members voted for a reduction today. Four schools close to Villa Park have closed early today ahead of Aston Villa's Europa League game against Israeli side Maccabi Tel Aviv. No away fans will attend the match after it was declared high risk by local officials. Ian Austin is a former Labour MP and trade envoy to Israel. He's also the son of a Jewish refugee and an Aston Villa season ticket holder. He's told Times Radio he's extremely concerned.
I don't think any of the blame for this can be laid at the foot of Aston Villa fans. All they want to see is the football match going ahead as usual. What we've seen in the area, though, I'm afraid, is extremism. We've seen sectarian politics. We've seen so-called community leaders and politicians whipping this thing up and creating this terrible atmosphere.
The Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency says it will take action after Times Radio revealed that people wanting to take a driving test are being targeted by scammers. Prospective drivers are being charged more than £500 for tests that don't exist. Scammers are even claiming they can guarantee that people will pass. Carly Brookfield from the Driving Instructors Association says the system is in crisis.
Alongside the pupils trying to get slots for driving tests, so our driving instructors, they're getting up at 6 a.m. when test slots are released by DBSA on a weekly basis and waiting in a queue of tens of thousands too, trying to get their pupils' slots. And they've also got pressure from pupils to get them test ready for that precious slot that the pupil knows if they fail that test, they're going back into a system where it's going to take them another long time to get a retest.
Tony Blair's think tank has told the government to drop its plans to give workers employment rights on day one. The former Prime Minister's Institute says the legislation currently making its way through the House of Lords could stunt economic growth. And there was a record number of referrals to the Prevent Anti-Extremism programme in the year to March. Almost 8,800 were made, up 27% on the year before. More than a third were children aged just 11 to 15. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms.
You are listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio. We're here until 4 o'clock. We had so many messages about books this afternoon. We're 0333 003 2353. If you're just joining us, in the last hour of the programme, we talked to writer and columnist and podcaster Pandora Sykes, who's also a curator of books for Vinted about the second-hand market, which is going all guns blazing in this country. Becky says, when I buy a new book, I then sell it to Sell Your Books. New books hold their resale value very well. Rob says the vast majority of authors earn tiny amounts and nothing from Vinted goes to authors. Tesco sell new paperbacks for under a fiver. We did have a think about this point in the office, Rob, and actually we just didn't have time to talk to Pandora about it. And it's kind of not on her to do publishing rights, actually. No. But when you take all of your books to a charity shop, the author is not getting anything. You're doing well for the charity, but the author doesn't get paid again. The only time you get paid again as an author is public lending rights, isn't it? If you go into a library, and as you and I know from our, I mean, we absolutely stormed the bastions of the publishing world 2 years ago.
I think it was longer ago than that.
You've got to be a very, very successful author for that to make a difference to you at all.
You really have.
But it is a good point. You know, if we get used to relying on a second-hand market, what does that mean for authors who might be becoming hugely popular, but they're not seeing anything because of that? That is slightly problematic, don't you think?
I think it probably is. Before you move on with the next item, we do have a bit of breaking news. The King has officially stripped his brother, Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor, of both his Royal Highness style and his Prince title. So the HRH has now officially gone for a Burton. Charles formally made the changes, which were dramatically announced a week ago, by issuing a letters patent under the Great Seal of the Realm. This was published in the Gazette, the UK's official public record, by the Crown Office. Now, we do have a royal adjacent guest with us this afternoon. That interview already recorded, sadly, but we do talk about Andrew. That's Lady Glenconner, who was Princess Margaret's lady-in-waiting and is a great friend of the King.
Right, let's dig into the news then. One of the two prisoners mistakenly released from Wandsworth Prison has handed himself in. Fraudster Billy Smith is back in custody while police are still hunting for Algerian sex offender Brahim Kadour Sharif. The Justice Secretary David Lammy has called a spike in mistaken releases unacceptable. Leader of the opposition Kemi Badenoch has said that the Deputy Prime Minister now owes Parliament an explanation after failing to address the situation properly at PMQs yesterday.
Let's find out exactly what he knew and when and why he refused to answer a very, very simple question despite being asked it five times. He was all bluster, accusations, shouting. I think he actually thought he'd done a good job until the whole story unraveled. We now know that he knew what had been going on and refused to tell the House. That is a serious problem, and he needs to come back to the House on Tuesday and explain what went wrong.
Well, David Lammy must be regretting most of yesterday. Danny Shaw is a policing and crime commentator as well as a former Labour Home Affairs advisor. And we'll talk about the police and the prison service here first, Danny, and what the latest is on the hunt for this final prisoner. I mean, this is trying to find a needle in a haystack, isn't it?
It's really difficult for the police because they were only alerted to the fact that Brahim Kadour Sharif was missing 6 days after he was released by mistake from Wandsworth Prison. So he's got a 6 days head start on them. Prison police sources have said to me that's the biggest battle that they're facing. They're starting by looking at his movements after he left Wandsworth Prison. So sort of tracing it back from then, where did he go? Trying to look for CCTV, looking to see whether he withdrew any cash from anywhere, using bank cards. That can sometimes give a clue as to where people go. I'm sure they'll be looking at cameras and so on transport network in London. But yeah, very difficult. I mean, I'm sure they'll also be visiting, if they haven't already, addresses that he was linked with, previous addresses, friends' addresses, addresses of family and so on. But you know, sources said to me, we don't even know if he's still in London. We can't say for certain if he's left the UK or not. One would have thought that that would be pretty difficult for him to do that, given the restrictions that he would have had in custody and so on. But yeah, it's a nightmare for the police.
Yeah, I mean, it's ironic that, isn't it? It's very difficult to get out and it does seem to be alarmingly easy to get in at the moment. What was this man actually in prison for, Danny?
Well, you know what? It's a symptom, really, of the problems in the criminal justice system that trying to get a straight answer about that and about his criminal record has been a really torturous process over the past 24 hours. We know that he arrived in the UK in 2019 on a visit visa from Algeria. He was originally from Algeria. In 2020... his visa had expired and he was flagged as a possible overstayer. So there's a question for the Home Office about why he wasn't deported. He's then committed, it would seem, a series of offences, including a sexual offence for which he received an 18-month community order and was placed on the sex offenders register. We know that he has a previous for theft, for assault, and breaching a sex offender notification charge, which was dismissed at court. And also, I think, handling stolen goods, there's a possible conviction there. So it's a series of offences, but it's unclear whether he was being held in prison on remand pending a future trial or whether he was being held because of a sentence. And that lack of clarity just tells you everything about the sort of the dysfunction of the criminal justice system and the lack of joined-upness between the Home Office, the courts and the prisons.
Yeah, I mean, it is really telling, Danny, isn't it? Because it's the answer to that very simple question that would also have been needed to be made definitively by people who were acting as custodians of this man. They needed to know what he was accused of, what he was in jail for, how long the term was, etc., etc. And if you can't get an answer to those questions, it does suggest that people working inside the prison service can't get an answer to those questions.
Yeah, and sometimes it's really unclear because what you find is that someone who's been sentenced originally to a community order, for example, and then carries out another offence and then possibly a third offence, and perhaps they're convicted of one and they're on trial for the other and they've done it all while they were sort of under conditions, then you've got a whole series of possible offences and breaches and it's a very complex process. But what I think we're hearing about him is that the prison weren't given the paperwork to show that there was a warrant, a court warrant, which authorised them to carry on detaining him. So without that, the prison didn't have the authority, it would appear, to keep him in custody, and that's why he was released. Now, why that warrant from the court didn't make its way to Wandsworth, we don't know. Was that a clerical error at the court? Was that someone at the prison that did the wrong thing? We know that this other guy who's now back in custody, William Smith or Billy Smith, the fraudster who sauntered up the steps at Wandsworth Prison this morning and then had a cheeky fag before he went back behind bars.
Right.
We know that he was let out inadvertently because of a clerical mistake at the court. The court thought that his sentence, I think 44 months for fraud, was a suspended sentence, so the prison released him. In fact, it was a custodial sentence and he should have stayed at Wandsworth.
Right, I mean,
he at least is back behind bars.
Yeah, for anyone who's not seen the footage of Billy Smith going back into the prison system, it's quite remarkable. Jaunty is the right word to use. And can you put this into context for us? Because these aren't individual cases, are they, Danny? And this is obviously the huge political problem. There are suggestions that the recent early release programme brought in by Labour has contributed to this, but the numbers definitely tell us that something was happening before.
Yes. I mean, look, every year there are prisoners released in error. The numbers was always around 50 or so per year, so one a week. And given, you know, the tens of thousands of people who are in prison, the thousands who are released and enter prison, I suppose you could say, well, that's probably, you know, an acceptable sort of human error rate. But then over the past couple of years, the numbers have really increased substantially. 262 in the 12 months to the end of March this year. And that was double the figure the previous year, which itself was an increase, I think, on the year before that. So I think one of the reasons is because sentencing has become much more complex, because the release point has changed for a lot of offenders from 50% to 40%. Not all of them, for some of them. Also, you've got, you know, when you're calculating the 40% or 50% mark, you have to deduct time spent on remand if a prisoner's been in jail awaiting trial. For some people who are on curfew and tags while waiting for their trial, some of that can count towards their sentence, so they can get time deducted for that. Then you've got some prisoners who are released even earlier on an electronic tag. It's hugely complex. I have a lot of sympathy with the prison officers that have to work this out. And they have to do it largely, it would seem, on pen and paper, because the computer systems just don't work well enough in prisons, would you believe? You would have thought you just press a couple of buttons on the computer and bingo, you've got your answer when a prisoner is going to be released. No. It's all done, you know, scribbling it down and using a calculator.
Right. I mean, that is extraordinary, isn't it, when nearly every area of our lives is so heavily digitised. You know, you can find out how many minutes you've got left on your e-phone plan within about 3 minutes. It seems extraordinary. You don't know how long a prisoner is meant to be serving. It's always good to talk to you, Danny. Thank you very much. Danny Shaw is a policing and crime commentator.
Now, coming up, there's been a row at Miss Universe. Well, back in the day when we used to compete regularly, it was sweetness and light.
It was very, very sweetness and light. Yeah, but
there's
yes.
trouble this year, and we'll tell you more in a moment. It's Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wickes, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Kate Borsay on Times Radio.
As Keir Starmer gets ready to address leaders at the COP30 summit in Brazil, we'll get the thoughts of the former chair of the Independent Climate Change Committee, Lord Deben, on what can be achieved in South America. And with new data revealing that three London boroughs were among the worst areas in England last year for child exploitation cases, we'll speak to the London Assembly member and former mayoral candidate Susan Hall, who's demanding answers from Sadiq Khan over grooming gangs.
Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio.
Oh, we can all be a bit forgetful from time to time, and Mum was no exception. Always losing her glasses and then not being able to find them again. It's a good job they were 2-for-1 at the opticians.
At the last count, I think she had 12 pairs.
Yeah, but there came a point when we noticed that it was more than just being a bit forgetful. And that's when we knew that Mum was going to need someone to give her some extra help around the house.
So that's where we got Claire in to help. She's Mum's care professional from Home Instead. She's wonderful and comes to the house most days. Home Instead are amazing. It really is the best quality care in your own home. And it's really reassuring to know that Mum's being looked after by someone as patient and kind as Claire.
Yeah, and as well as all the day-to-day stuff that Claire does, she also helps Mum with her favourite thing in the world, baking. Mm. Mum's chocolate cake was always the talk of the town, and it turns out that with Claire's help, it still is.
For award-winning home care you can trust, go to homeinstead.co.uk.
Ever wondered what power is? Power is transforming the sun into your own energy source. Power is getting energy companies to pay you. Power is enjoying your morning coffee, knowing you created the energy to make it. Well, you and the colossal ball of fire in the sky. Because with solar panels from Hive, the sun works for you. Hive, know your power. May not cover all electricity usage, roof and weather dependent. Paid for surplus requires eligible SEG tariff.
Visit Times Radio on YouTube for the latest videos and interviews.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms. Ready to start your next home project? This autumn at Wix, there are great kitchen and bathroom offers available. Explore the ranges at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
Now, in a world of turmoil, it seems you can't go anywhere these days for anything approaching tranquility. Several of this year's Miss Universe contestants have walked out of an event after one of the organisers publicly berated Miss Mexico.
If you follow the order from your national director, you are dumb. No, no, not about you. Not about you. Not about you.
It's not about me. It's about all the people that I represent.
I didn't give you opportunity to talk. Please keep polite for me. I'm still talking. Listen. I still keep talking to everybody while you stand up to talk to me.
Because I have a voice and it's not correct, but it's not. If you have a problem...
No, you have a voice, but you have to respect. The wife...
You are not respecting me as a woman.
What? Mama, why you stand up? Because I have... Oh, where's the gun? Security.
Yeah. Oh, dear. That was the pageant's Thailand director telling the contestant off, apparently for failing to post some promotional content. Called security when she tried to defend herself and then threatened to disqualify the other women who left the room in solidarity with Miss Mexico. Well, Xing Seng is a former vice editor-in-chief, journalist and author of a book called Forgotten Women, which reaches around the world and its history to rediscover and retell the lives of important women. That is Xing's book. Xing, this is an extraordinary development at a contest, I must admit, I didn't actually know it still existed. What can you tell us about this?
I mean, so basically this was part of a pre-pageant ceremony. The actual contest itself starts later on in November this month. And the reason why it's been captured is because these pre-pageant ceremonies are usually live streamed, which basically means that, you know, there's no way of getting around it. As you can hear from the audio, it was incredibly, you know, distressing to even just listen to. It is literally, you could not make it up. A man telling a woman to shut up at an event that ostensibly is meant to celebrate women, which is what the Miss Universe contest is now trying to pivot towards in the last few years. So it's kind of interesting to see that it has very quickly condemned the Thai director and has said that they would limit his involvement in the contest as much as possible, and that they might also be taking legal action against him.
Okay. He did appear, as far as I could hear there, to call Miss Mexico a dumbhead. I mean, it's so far, as you say, from what this contest is now supposed to be about. I mean, this cannot be tolerated.
Exactly. And I think, you know, we all think, still some of us think of Miss Universe as being this real hangover from a patriarchal time, you know, where women were disqualified on the basis of, you know, not measuring up to certain body statistics, the infamous bikini round where women would get sent out and disqualified on behalf of not, you know, looking good in their bikinis. So Miss Universe has tried over the last few years to really pivot away from that. So they've done things such as they've removed marital status requirements. So those who were married or divorced were once upon a time banned from competing in Miss Universe. If you had children, you were also banned. They've also removed kind of the need to know what the ages of the contestants are. So they've removed quite a lot of restrictions that, you know, arguably were holding this contest back in the past. But it's unfortunate to see that some of the people still working for the contest still really seem to subscribe to those kind of patriarchal norms.
Is there any suggestion that the whole thing is going to be cancelled?
No, and I doubt that it will. I mean, the Miss Universe universe, I guess you could put it, is enormous. I mean, there are Miss Universe contests in every single country that participates. You know, it's a little bit like a bigger version of Eurovision, if you want to put it that way. So millions of dollars go into this all over the world. I think it's really unlikely that, you know, the contest itself will be cancelled. And I think that is also partly why the Thai organizers' participation has been so quickly removed from him, because they are aware of the fact that if they let this kind of brew any longer, it will raise questions about the contest as a whole. And then the cause to kind of cancel it will grow even longer, louder.
I suppose you could say, look, these women have entered this competition. They must have had an idea of what it was likely to be like. How much sympathy should we have for them? What would you say about that?
It's interesting because I do think the Miss Universe pageant and the people it now attracts is very different from the kind of people it used to attract as contestants in the past. So they used to be significantly younger. They were pageant queens. So they were kind of used to beauty contests. They had, you know, done these rounds before. But Miss Universe, as part of this rebrand, has really moved towards trying to attract women who are leaders in their own right, whether that's social activists, business women, entrepreneurs, you know, people who are giving back to their community, you know, local leaders. So in that sense, I think if you sign up for Miss Universe and you're told, you know, well, what we want to do is celebrate women's empowerment, it must come as a real shock if you are then treated like, you know, essentially cattle in these kind of pre-pageant ceremonies. So I'm not surprised at all to see that other Miss Universe contestants have also walked out in solidarity with Fatima Bosch.
Right. Okay. I imagine this is a massive money spinner that it is being held in Thailand. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah. It is. Thailand is the host nation.
Right. And it will bring in a load of income and presumably plenty of visitors as well.
Exactly. Plenty of visitors and plenty of publicity, which I think is why this live stream has, you know, traveled so far, because all eyes are going to be on Thailand in advance of the competition.
Right. Thank you very much indeed. Xing Seng, who is a former vice editor-in-chief, journalist and author of a book called Forgotten Women.
So from 1996 to 2015,
yes.
Do you know who ran Miss Universe?
Now, was it...
It was
a couple who used to run Miss World. It's not them.
No, it's not them. It was Donald Trump.
No. What's happened to him?
I don't know. Seems to be an extraordinary departure from his usually very cerebral work
interests.
Right, it's 24 minutes past three. More than 700 police officers are on duty for the match between Maccabi Tel Aviv and Aston Villa today. Police have warned those not attending to steer clear of the area amidst fears of significant disruption. We can talk to Times Radio's Nick Ellaby, who's at Villa Park for us. Nick, what's the latest and what do you see from where you are? I think schools around the ground have been closed for the afternoon. This is being taken incredibly seriously.
Yes, good afternoon, Fee. I'm just outside the halt end of Villa Park, where you've got that game tonight between Aston Villa and Maccabi Tel Aviv. As you mentioned, kickoff is at 8 o'clock. The latest in terms of what's happening around here right now is a lot of the schools are already out. I've just come past a primary school about an hour or so ago, and one of the dads told me that the school told them they were expecting as many as 20,000 protesters around Villa Park today. Now, there's a couple of things going on. One is a kind of coalition of pro-Palestine solidarity groups that are going to be massing in the park just to my right. This is Aston Park, which sits next to Villa Park in Aston in the north of Birmingham. If you look at reports online, anything between, you know, a few thousand and 50,000 people expected. Nobody really knows, and I don't think the police do either. And then you've also got some pro-Israel groups. Our Fight UK will be holding placards in support of British Jews tonight. And there's also the spectre of Tommy Robinson, the founder of the English Defence League, turning up in a Maccabi Tel Aviv shirt, which he said online that he will do. What the pro-Palestinian groups are here for is, one, to show people in Palestine that they're being thought about, show solidarity, and also they're asking for Israeli sports teams to be kicked out of international competition. And you've got those counter-protesters potentially coming up the road on the other side of the ground here, which could see clashes. We've just actually got a whole huge number, probably two dozen riot police just coming past on the other side of the road now. And as you mentioned, 700 police, there's going to be dog teams, horses, drones, police drones, and a no-fly zone around Villa Park to stop people flying their own drones. And the police are kind of trying to balance that right to protest with what they're trying to do is trying to protect all of the communities here in Birmingham.
Yeah. Remind us of the course of events that brought us to this, Nick.
Well, on the 16th of October, the news broke that the Birmingham Safety Advisory Group, which is kind of a mix of local politicians, police and also emergency services, decided that they were going to prevent Maccabi Tel Aviv fans from attending this game. And they said that decision was based on present intelligence and past events. Now, a lot of people are talking about those past events being a game that Maccabi Tel Aviv played in Amsterdam against Ajax last November, where there were a number of arrests and kind of pitch battles in the streets between pro-Palestinian groups and Jewish Israeli Maccabi Tel Aviv fans. There were five arrests made, local people in Amsterdam, but also some arrests made in Israel as well for things that people posted online. Now, there was quite a lot of violence that night. A taxi driver was attacked, and also a number of Maccabi Tel Aviv fans were attacked. And, you know, you've got obviously the background is what's going on in Israel and Gaza. And then because of all that and because of intelligence that West Midlands police have not actually told us exactly what that is, they decided to prevent Maccabi Tel Aviv fans from coming here tonight. But I think that may have inflamed things a little bit further, really. And then I've been speaking to a lot of the people around here. Some of the local businesses are saying they might close early, as well as the schools closing early. There are two train stations just near the ground, Witten and Aston, where a lot of the students will come out from. So all the football fans will be coming in through there as well. So I think they just wanted all the kids out of the area before any, you know, potential trouble kicks off. And a nice guy just walked past with his very young son. He must be about 5 or 6. They're attending the game tonight. I said, "Are you worried?" And he pointed to his little son and says, "Yeah, we are a little bit worried, but they are going to be attending that game. Kickoff is at 8 p.m. tonight."
Right, Nick. Well, thank you very much indeed for that. Nick Ellaby is covering that story for us at Villa Park. As he said, the game kicks off at 8. And we can see on the screen exactly where Nick was. And there was a huge troop of riot police who marched past. You could also see that the whole road had been coned off too. You've been to many football matches. They are so busy on the going in, busy on the going out. Mm. There is so much going on around the ground anyway. There is work cut out, isn't there, for the authorities this evening?
I do feel sorry for the authorities here. I've got to say, there's no way I'd take a 5-year-old to a game like that. I'm sorry, but no, why would you?
Me neither. Just in case. Just in case.
I wouldn't take a 15-year-old to that, never mind a 5-year-old. Anyway, football fans can make some bizarre decisions. Let's leave it at that. Now, after 3:30 this afternoon, our guest is Lady Glenn Connor. And she is, by the way, people call her Anne. I noticed that. The assistant she came with called her Anne, so I decided to call her Anne as well. I wasn't sure.
That's a little bold, Jay.
Well, etiquette, is, as you know, is not my middle name, because that's Susan.
No, that's Susan.
So Lady Glenn Connor is with us. She has a new book out. This one is called Manners and Mischief, and I hope you enjoy the interview. There are some very serious elements to it, but she's also, as you'll know if you've heard any conversation involving her before, hugely entertaining. So that is next on Times Radio. Let's get the headlines. Here's Andy Hayes.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, says he was not equipped with all the facts about a mistaken prisoner release when he appeared at Prime Minister's Questions yesterday. He's also admitted the government has a huge task in tackling the prisons crisis.
The rate of release by error is too high. It has to come down. This is a paper-based system. That obviously involves human error. We had 800 errors under the last government. This has now gone on for a generation. Our prison system is in crisis, so we have to bear down on this, but we have a mountain to climb.
Surrey Police says one of two men mistakenly released from jail has handed himself in. Billy Smith was wrongly let go from Wandsworth Prison earlier this week, sparking a 3-day manhunt. The search for sex offender Brahim Kador Sharif continues. The Bank of England has held the base rate of interest at 4%. But experts think there could be a cut next month when the impact of the forthcoming budget will be clearer. Four of the nine committee members voted for a reduction today. And 21 people have been arrested after police were attacked with fireworks in Birmingham. In addition, a number of weapons were seized during bonfire night celebrations in the city centre. Those involved were aged between 14 and 25 and remain in custody. Meanwhile, a 14-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of arson in Highton on Merseyside after emergency services were targeted there. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
This is Times Radio.
They're bubbly, they're fuzzy, and they're ruddy delicious.
At Oddbox, we rescue farm fresh fruit and veg that's too odd for supermarkets. Then we deliver direct to your door, so every box and every crunch makes a difference to growers and the planet. Use the code RADIO to get 50% off your first box at oddbox.co.uk and help fight food waste, one curvy cucumber at a time. Offer excludes delivery fees. Conditions apply.
Here's to the moment. To the places that give you perspective and the people who change that perspective. The curiosity that leads you to the edge of the earth and the joy that meets you there. Silversea brings you closer to the rare, the remote, and the remarkable. On spacious yet intimate ships that show you what most miss. Here's to having every reason to celebrate, to finding more. Learn more at silversea.com.
Ancestry is marking remembrance with free access to global wartime records until Wednesday. Immerse yourself in your ancestors' wartime experiences from the home front to the front line. Explore military records and historic photos and uncover stories of courage and resilience. Register with just your name and email at ancestry.co.uk to start searching with no payment needed. Honour their legacy today with Ancestry. Free access ends the 12th of November.
Daryl Morris wraps up the weekend's news and takes a look at the week ahead, Saturday and Sunday from 10 p.m.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in bathroom design and installation. Transform your bathroom. Book a free home visit and measure, and then let the Wix design experts help you choose from thousands of products. Book a free bathroom design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Times Radio. Now, we're never too far away from some royal news. I can see Prince William on the monitors in the studio. He's addressing the COP30 summit. And, well, somebody's rather less in favour. Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor has been formally stripped of his HRH title and his title of Prince. The changes were formally made by the King today, a week after he'd announced that they would indeed take place. Some people in the, I suppose you could call it the royal orbit, are much admired and much liked by just about everybody. And our next guest is one such person. It's Lady Glenconner. She was 87 when her book Lady in Waiting was published and it became a bestseller. Now, Princess Margaret's former right-hand woman is having the time of her life. And if you know anything about what she's been through, you will know that she deserves it. Her late husband, Colin Tennant, was violent and abusive, and two of their three sons have died. She still has her son Christopher and her twin daughters Amy and May, and a career as a writer that she could never have imagined in the past. Her latest book is Manners and Mischief, an A to Z of a life lived well. It's fair to say she's enjoying herself immensely.
Never had such a good time. I started off at 87, and luck or karma or whatever it was, my first book, Lady in Waiting, has been a world bestseller, over a million copies now, well over 24 countries. It's been they got it in Russia and in Ukraine, so I get letters. I have to answer in a rather different way. You know, I'm a bit strict with my letters to Russia, and much more sympathetic to Ukraine. But what fun! How amazing at my age that, you know, this is. I'm doing this.
Well, because some people will be able to see you now as they hear you speak. You are 93, and I do find that hard to believe. So do you have any secrets you could pass on about how you've done this?
Well, while I can't pass on, I'm just very lucky. Got no grey hair, never done anything to my hair, not dyed it. But Years ago, I had acne, and my mother sent me off to two ladies that had been trained in Paris, and one of their creams was whale oil. I know nowadays that that would not be allowed, but I still got a tiny bit left, and I put my complexion down to whale oil.
Whale oil. But how old is this? This must be, what, 70 years old now?
What, the whale oil?
Yes. Does it smell?
Well, yes, it's very strong, actually. But it really works. But I know people can't kill whales, and I understand that. But they had something, those ladies. I think partly one looks well. I mean, I'm so happy. And I think when you're happy, hopefully. I'm far too busy to grow old, actually.
Yes, okay, well, that's really wonderful to hear, and thank you for sharing it. Everybody will be trying desperately to find this whale oil, but as you say, it's not going to be easy to get hold of. Can we talk a little bit about the fact that you say in this book that for many years you were on the periphery of action? Your job really was to facilitate the lives of others, your husband and Princess Margaret when you were her lady-in-waiting. Now it is you front and centre. And yes, you are enjoying this, aren't you?
Well, of course I am. You know, I've really come up with a bang. And people, that they actually want to hear what I've got to say, which is so marvellous. Because, yes, for most of my life, I mean, my husband, I was invisible with Colin. I mean, and, of course, my role as lady-in-waiting was to be invisible. I mean, I've followed Princess Margaret. But I used to be a bit sad. They used to put on a lot of amateur theatricals, and I was never allowed to take part because my job was to get people into whatever they were wearing, button them up, and come here, you know. And I used to scurry along with my needle and thread to sew them into something. So now my life is fantastic, you know, because I'm me. I couldn't have been me, really, until Princess Margaret and Colin were gathered. But as they've now both been gathered, I feel much more relaxed, actually.
Well, okay. I mean, Princess Margaret was not the easiest lady, but she was easier than Colin, your late husband.
Oh, much. Because in the end, I had a flat in London, and she said to me, "Is it ready?" And I said, "No, but hopefully it'll be ready in about 2 weeks' time." "Oh," she said, "in that case, do come and stay with me at Kensington Palace." I said, "Ma'am, that's very kind of you." And I was there a year, it turned out. And so I really got to know her. I wasn't with her the whole time. I had my own bedroom and little kitchen. And I had my own maid, actually. But I was quite often asked down. And she always kept the front door open for some reason. She always needed a lot of fresh air. And when I used to come back at night, I used to sort of creep in, always caught out. "Anne, is that you?" "Yes, ma'am." "Oh, well, so pleased you're here. Come in and have a drink." And, of course, she never went to bed very early. But it was lovely. I got to know her really well. And when I left, she said to me, "Wasn't that wonderful without our very difficult husbands?" Because Tony had already, she'd already got
divorced. This is Lord Snowden,
And Colin spent a lot of time in the West Indies. Mm. So, I mean, I loved her. I missed her so much, you know.
Yes. You were very, very close. What age was Princess Margaret at this stage when you were living that with her?
Well, she died, I suppose she was about 66, 67,
yes,
that
so
sort
not,
of age.
Not elderly at all at that
no,
time.
No, really. She wasn't, but she died very young, sadly, you know.
Yes. Your husband, Colin, was, again, you say in the book, and you've said it before, that you were the victim of domestic violence, that he was an incredibly complicated man, and complicated is generous, I think.
Yes, he was dangerous, unfortunately. But I didn't, when I first wrote my Lady-in-Waiting, I didn't like to put too much in. And it was really due to the Queen. You know, she's done so much. The current Queen, yeah. Camilla. So much for people, of domestic abuse. And funnily enough, that was one of my charities that I did a long time ago, yes. A lady called Erin Pizzi, and one of my when I was on duty, people could, if they got to a telephone box, they could ring us up and we'd come and fetch them. And one of my jobs was, if anybody rang, I used to go down to these telephone boxes. it was generally at night, and it says that they were in their nighties and dressing gowns, the children clutching a teddy, and that was it. And then we used to take them, and we had flats. I raised quite a lot of money. David Astor was helped a lot, actually, in that. And so I had worked with people who had been abused, and in a sort of way, one doesn't think one is being abused. Well, there was one or two really bad instances with Colin. The present Queen said, "Anne, if you write about it, I'm sure it would help people." And I think that's true. I get the most really sad, actually, letters now, you know, from people. Difficult to give them advice, but what I say is, you know, if you feel you can stick it out, do. But if you feel it's too dangerous, then you must leave.
Yes.
And I think that's, you know.
So the Queen, the current Queen, Camilla, she did know about the abuse in your marriage?
Oh, yes. I think most people did, in a way, because he didn't hide it a lot of the time, you know. And he just couldn't control it. Terrible, terrible temper. But we remained married, partly because he then moved to the West Indies. I used to go out there. I mean, we loved each other.
And this is the really difficult bit, isn't it?
Yes.
can you actually explain that?
Well, all I can say is, I mean, he had so many sort of wonderful things about him. I mean, he was wonderfully funny, very, very well educated, and charming and sweet a lot of the time. But he just could not control his temper. Terrible, terrible temper. Where he just I don't know what happened to him. He became a completely different person. And I couldn't have remained with him, actually, if he hadn't gone and moved out to the West Indies. He knew that. He said to me, "Anne, I said to him once, why did you marry me? You know, because I was always blamed." And he said, "Because I knew you'd stick it out." And I did for 54 years. But he did realise, he said, "Well, you know, I'm impossible to live with." And I said, "You are." But anyway, we managed it by, you know, being apart a lot of the time.
Right. One of the wonderful things in this book, it's a kind of A to Z of your little, a compendium of your thoughts and anecdotes. And you talk about your father and your mother, actually, being reunited with you and your siblings after, I think, 3 years away.
Yes.
And he writes a diary about it.
Exactly. He says, "We arrived in Glasgow. My great aunt that we were living with sent a car. And all he says was, arrived at Downey, met by children. And then the next thing is, wonderful shoot, shot 5 pheasants and 3 rabbits, or whatever it is." I mean, nothing about what we looked like. I mean, we'd only recognise them by photographs. I remember we were very shy. We had a lovely governess that had been looking after us. I remember hiding behind her. I mean, my mother was wonderful. I mean, very quickly we adored her. But my father didn't kiss us. He shook her hands, I think.
Things were very different. Things are better now, aren't they? Tell me that.
Oh, well, yes. I had 5 children, lost 2. But, you know, I mean, we were as loving. And that was good. I mean, Colin, although he was difficult, we had this wonderful nanny, Barbara, who went on to look at Prince Harry and Prince William. And she was wonderful because she removed the children when she knew, you know, something unpleasant was going to happen.
Yes, I mean, this is another very tricky area, but to be around the possibility of domestic violence, it's excruciating for everybody involved, isn't it?
It's like walking on eggshells, and you never completely enjoy yourself because you're always on the lookout for altering something that might irritate the person, or, you know, it's not at all comfortable, no.
No, it really isn't. There's a lot of nuggets in this book. I want to know why you've done, I wrote this down, I was so shocked, 4 speed awareness courses.
Well, impatience. I have a little thing about how impatient I am, and, you know, cannot bear it. My mother drove very well. My mother actually rode a Harley Davidson, and my mother was amazing. She rode horses, Harley Davidson. She was a very quick driver, and in those days you could. But you know, there you are behind somebody going 50 miles an hour, bit of straight road, yippee, off you go. And then when you get caught by cameras, always. And the first speed awareness course is you had to go somewhere.
Yes.
Totally boring. You had to take your sandwiches and endless videos. There's one extraordinary video where they said, "Did you see the ape?" And I think we all said no. I mean, we were watching it. There was a man bouncing balls, and we had to count how many times he bounced it. They put this video on again. There was this huge gorilla walked very, very slowly across. None of us saw it. I mean, and that's why they put it on, because you often miss a motorbike.
Of course. But, you know. And it's serious stuff. I have to say, that course obviously didn't work, because you went on to do three more.
No, no, no. I loved it on at home. We did it on the, whatever you call it.
Zoom.
Yeah. I hate Zoom normally, but I love that. There were about 20 of us. One or two went to sleep at once, because you can see exactly what everybody... I imagine they didn't pass. Anyway, I was Miss Goody Two-Shoes. I loved it. The one or two of us, and when they said, when did you pass your test? I said, in 1949. They did look a bit. they gazed at me. But anyway, I love driving.
Yes.
Because it was the only moment I get away from Colin, because I used to, because I still only have a mobile in the car.
You'd keep a mobile phone in the car?
Well, the children make me. I don't know how to use it, really, but it's just in case I break down.
I see, yes. Yeah, you don't use it when you're driving.
Oh, goodness, no.
No.
Okay, I never use it anyway. I mean, I don't know how to, really.
Right. Well, I think
I'm absolutely hopeless about that sort of thing.
Do you know what? I honestly don't think you're missing much, so I would keep it that way.
Well, I am going to, yeah.
The book is, you are full of praise for the late Queen and for the current Queen, Camilla, and we've already talked about her, but do you think there used to be a time, well, not that long ago, that the late Queen was beyond criticism? And since all this business about Andrew, people are beginning to question her slightly. Do you sense that?
Yes, I do. I mean, I knew Andrew now. We don't have to call him Prince. Because Henry, my son Henry, was born 3 weeks after Andrew. And because the Queen had him rather late, I suppose, in life, and all her friends' children were sort of grown up. So, she wrote to me, I wrote to her. We exchanged something called a romper suit, which is what little boys wore on those days. And he used to come down with Mabel, his nanny, quite often to visit us. And, I haven't really seen much of him since he's grown up. But I think it's difficult. I see that, because she did adore him. I mean, he was born a prince. The king, you see, is 11 years older than him. And I remember her writing to my mother, because my mother was a lady-in-waiting, saying, so wonderful to have a baby in the nursery again. You know, and she just loved him.
Do you think he was, well, one of his many issues, is that he was spoiled?
Well, maybe he was allowed to get away with more than the King and Princess Anne. Yes, it's difficult. I mean, partly I felt, and a lot of my friends felt, we'd been through a war. We had, there was rationing, we were frightened, and there was the Queen and Princess Margaret, you know, at Windsor, and we wanted to compensate. That we wanted to give our children something that we hadn't had, you know, that we hadn't had because of the war. And my mother thought, I spoilt my children, you know, because we used to go abroad, we used to go to a different capital every holiday. We took them here, you know, they had nice food, we took them out to restaurants.
Yes, different times.
Yes. And it was this great thing, having been brought through, like the Queen and Princess Margaret, you know, I mean, they were on rations, and if we had a bath, it was only 5 inches, I think we allowed hot water. We had no clothes, we had coupons. And so it was this thing after the war that we wanted to spoil our children, I think.
Yes.
And I think that's probably what she did.
You and your circle who spent time with the royal family, were there mutterings about the way Andrew conducted himself?
Well, not really. I mean, I didn't see him very much. He was quite forcible. I mean, I remember him snatching toys away from my son a bit like that. You
even
know.
As a baby?
Yeah, he was a handful. I think that's what his nanny called him, a handful.
Yes. It's interesting, isn't it, that Princess Margaret she was in the same position in terms of succession as Princess.
Yes, she was a spare,
was nearly going to be the monarch, or could have been the monarch had tragedy struck. Do you think there is a particular challenge about being that person?
I think it is. I mean, I wasn't talked to. I mean, Princess Margaret's totally loyal to the Queen. I never heard her once. The only thing she complained about was that she wasn't educated like the Queen. The Queen had people from Eton, Oxford, Cambridge, you know, came, and Princess Margaret didn't. And that was the only complaint she ever said. But I do think, yes, if you're a spare. I mean, Princess Margaret handled it extremely well, I think. And then, of course, the Queen married and had the King, Prince Charles, and so.
Yes, and Prince Harry was also that person. And
he was that person too, yeah.
Yeah, and it's evidence suggests that is a tricky role.
Well, having been, I don't know about them so much, I suppose it might be, but definitely with Princess Margaret, it wasn't. I mean, she never showed any, she's always absolutely supportive.
Perhaps that's because sisters have a stronger bond than brothers, I don't know.
Well, maybe. Yes, that's interesting. They did have a very strong bond. They rang each other up every day and, you know, they loved each other, yes.
Something I learnt from the book, and I didn't know this, is that multiple births are a bit common. Now, I haven't had a multiple birth.
Well, I just couldn't resist putting that in.
I am common,
in.
Though.
I hesitated putting that in, because nowadays you have to be so careful
of
what
course.
You say. You
yeah.
know, everything's a minefield, difficult. But it was, and my sister, of course, I think she was jealous, because she had three boys, and so she was always getting at me, you know, like sisters do. And she's, and I didn't know I was having twins, because in those days, you know.
Yes.
And in the end, right at the, I think 5 or 6 days before they were born, I had an x-ray. I think the doctor thought, but they were mirror twins, and it's very difficult to tell if it's one or two like that. And, of course, the nurse came out and said, "Oh, Lady Glenconner, you're having twins." I just burst into tears. So exhausted. They weighed 6 pounds each. I was waddling along with 12 pounds. I thought, luckily the birth was very easy. They popped out and the doctor said, "One daughter, Lady Glenconner. Oh, and two." So they were thrilled, absolutely
you were
thrilled.
Well, yes,
thrilled. I long for nothing like daughters, I can tell you. Sons, wonderful, but if they marry, they could get away. You never lose your daughters. And since I broke my back earlier on this year, and my daughters, they're mirror twins, and they've been so wonderful looking after me.
Have they?
They're common. It was common, but you can call it not common, you
common,
know what I mean?
Common. Well, yes, it is a minefield.
but multiple births were considered for some unknown reason. Anyway, my sister's thrilled. I said, "God, Anne, twins, honestly, you know, it couldn't be more common." It was a sort of joke. I felt a bit dashed, but anyway, there we are.
See, we were talking about the bond between sisters, and you've just illustrated another issue with sisters.
Another.
Yeah, not always that simple. Yeah. Something I wanted to ask is, you do say that sometimes when you're in Norfolk, because you're based there, aren't you, I think?
Yes, yes.
That the Queen, Camilla, will ask you to come and keep the King company if she's elsewhere.
Yes, and I do. I go over to supper with him quite often, actually.
And people will want to know, how is he?
Well, he's great. I mean, he's so much better, you know, from the sort of cancer point of view. He seems fine. And he loves being in Norfolk. I mean, he's waited a long time to be king. And so he's doing a lot of things that he's been longing to do, you know, for years. I mean, he's got a lot of worries, obviously, at the moment, but on the whole, I've seen him quite recently, actually. We had a great time. I always try. The thing is, I've known him since he was three.
Yeah.
He used to come and stay with us at Holcombe. He adored my mother. My mother taught him how to do pottery and my father.
Did she make him fish for eels? Or was
yes,
that...
she did. There's a wonderful photograph in my book. And when he looked at it, I just the other day, he said, "Isn't your mother smoking a pipe? Hasn't she got a pipe?" And she has. And I was slightly embarrassed. I sort of said, "Did she let you have a..." He just looked at me and smiled. So I think he probably said, "Would you like a go?" But I think it's because I've known him for so long. And we always have lovely talks and, you know. I feel very, very privileged to have him as a friend.
Lady Glen Connor talking there about her friendship with the King. Her latest book is called Manners and Mischief, an A to Z of a life lived well, and it is out now.
Can I give you some random letters and you can just inform us as to what the interpretation is? So I'm going to go in at F.
Oh, goodness. Right, stay tuned. This is Riveting Radio. I don't know my alphabet.
Putting Jane on the spot.
Friendship.
Friendship.
Yep.
Okay, that's very nice. Mm-hmm. And I'll go right to the end just to prepare you. Yep. I'd like to know what Y is.
Y is V was for visitors, by the way. She's quite funny about how to get rid of visitors. She's quite funny about a lot of things. Why next?
Okay, this is absolutely glorious.
Yachting. Ring. Yachting. Of course.
Yachting. I wouldn't have had that in my why facility.
Wouldn't you?
No. Okay. Right, we've got some absolutely cracking guests coming up for you next week. Next week on the programme, it will be me and Rosie Wright. Louise Penny, the extraordinarily successful crime novelist, joins us on Monday. Katie Prescott, our technology correspondent, has written a really detailed book about the life and times and the death of Mike Lynch. And Petula Clark is on the programme as well. That's an interview that Jane has done. So we'll have you in our lives in short form with your interview with Petula Clark.
Yeah, absolutely. We should say this is Jane and Fee with Wix on Times Radio. You can book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay on Times Radio with the new Volkswagen California camper van. Embark on an evening expedition, rounding up the latest news and previewing tomorrow's headlines. Plus, don't miss Hit the Road, your essential weekly travel guide to the best destinations across the UK and beyond. The Evening Edition, tonight from 7 on Times Radio with the new Volkswagen California camper van. Designed for every adventure. Search New Volkswagen California to find out more.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio.
They're bubbly, they're fuzzy, and they're ruddy delicious.
At Oddbox, we rescue farm fresh fruit and veg that's too odd for supermarkets. Then we deliver direct to your door, so every box and every crunch makes a difference to growers and the planet. Use the code RADIO to get 50% off your first box at oddbox.co.uk and help fight food waste, one curvy cucumber at a time. Offer excludes delivery fees. Conditions apply.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/UK/AI for people.
Ancestry is marking remembrance with free access to global wartime records until Wednesday. Immerse yourself in your ancestors' wartime experiences from the home front to the front line. Explore military records and historic photos and uncover stories of courage and resilience. Register with just your name and email at ancestry.co.uk to start searching with no payment needed. Honour their legacy today with Ancestry. Free access ends the 12th of November.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Our producer today was Felix Forbes. Our technical operator was, is, and hopefully always will be Ryan Boyden. John Pienaar will be joining you next, taking you through until 7 o'clock. When you get to it, have a lovely evening.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Fee. Thank you, Jane. At 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar. This is Times Radio Drive, and here are the headlines. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, says he was not equipped with all the detail when he was asked about a prisoner release during Prime Minister's questions. And the King has now formally removed the title of Prince from Andrew Mountbatten, Windsor. And coming up, I'll be looking closely at David Lammy's comments with the Times policy editor. And does a former Conservative Justice Secretary think his party should take some of the blame for the crisis in our prisons? And could Putin wade into the growing tensions between the US and Venezuela? The foreign affairs expert, Tim Marshall, is going to be joining me.
This is Times Radio.
Now the news with Andy Hayes.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, says he was not equipped with all the facts about a mistaken prisoner release when he appeared at Prime Minister's Questions yesterday. Surrey Police says one of two men mistakenly released from jail has handed himself in. Convicted fraudster Billy Smith was wrongly let go from Wandsworth Prison earlier this week, sparking a three-day manhunt. The search for sex offender Brahim Kadour Sharif continues. Tory leader Kemi Badenoch says Lammy still has questions to answer.
It's quite clear that he had answers which he refused to give. I think that all of that is going to come out in the wash. I think that it was a very embarrassing session for him deputising for the Prime Minister. And what we're seeing right now is a Prime Minister abroad. The Deputy Prime Minister is spending a lot of time debating whether or not he bought a new suit. This is not serious. This is a distraction from the serious issues about crime in our country.
The Bank of England has held the base rate of interest at 4%. Experts think there could be a cut before the end of the year once the impact of the forthcoming budget is clearer. Governor Andrew Bailey has set out his economic forecast.
Headline inflation was 3.8% in August and in September. We expect this to be the peak. Underlying price and wage pressures have continued to ease. We expect headline inflation to fall to close to 3% by early next year before gradually returning to the 2% target.
More than 700 police officers are on duty for the game between Maccabi Tel Aviv and Aston Villa in Birmingham tonight. No away fans will attend the match after it was declared high risk by local officials. Maccabi decided not to contest that decision. Police have warned those not attending to steer clear of the area amid fears of significant disruption. Times Radio's Nick Ellerby, who's at Villa Park, says officers will have to be agile.
There's no proper plans for these protests. They're not kind of sanctioned. There's not a set route as they are for a lot of these things. So I think the police are just sort of playing this one quite cautiously. 700 officers, dog teams, drones. There's a no-fly zone to stop people from flying their own drones here. There'll be horse-mounted police as well.
The mother of Southport killer Axel Rudakabana has told the inquiry she didn't have a discussion with her son about the danger of carrying knives after he was expelled from school because she was very scared. She's admitted she didn't challenge him and was soft in talking to him. Letitia Muzi-Ear says her son became increasingly isolated, moody and withdrawn. The King has formally stripped his brother Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor of both HRH and the title of Prince. The monarch has issued a letters patent saying the former Duke of York is no longer entitled to hold the honours. It's because of Andrew's links to the convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, he's always denied any wrongdoing. And yesterday was the warmest bonfire night on record. The Met Office says temperatures in Teddington in southwest London dropped to a very mild 14.4 degrees. That was the low, breaking a previous record, which has stood since 1938. And for a roundup of the news on demand, subscribe to the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, online and on your smart speaker, quality journalism, analysis and opinion that speaks for itself. John Pienaar at Drive on Times Radio.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Times Radio Drive. It's good to have your company. Now, maybe David Lammy should have learned from his famous appearance on Celebrity Mastermind. At least on Mastermind, he answered the quiz questions that he was asked. Now, true, one of his memorable answers was Marie Antoinette, when Lammy had been asked who had discovered radium and its radioactive properties. The answer was Marie Curie, of course. I'm sure you knew that. And I'm sure Lammy probably knew that the last Queen of France wasn't a pioneering nuclear scientist. But just answering Marie Antoinette over and over again could hardly have been worse than ducking the question altogether in the Commons when he was asked about a yet another prisoner being released by mistake. And then, far worse, surely, turning down a request from the Speaker of the Commons to make a statement because, according to his team, it would have meant career suicide. So, where are we? Where's David Lammy? Is David Lammy's cabinet job in question? I think we know the answer to that one. But we'll try to get a few more about the state of our prison service. And while we're at it, talk about the responsibility of the last Conservative government for handing Labour a criminal justice system in such a truly deplorable state. I wonder what you're thinking. Send me a text, 87222. Start with the word Times and let me know. Or tweet to @TimesRadio. Now, let's talk about what's gone on in the last hour then, when the Justice Secretary, David Lammy, has given more details about how two prisoners came to be released from Wandsworth Prison.
I have found out that the release that has caused concern this week was actually before I introduced those checks just a few weeks ago following the release of Kabatu. And the other prisoner was a court mistake, not in fact a prison mistake. But the truth is, I've been in post 2 months. The rate of release by error is too high. It has to come down. This is a paper-based system that obviously involves human error. We had 800 errors under the last government. This has now gone on for a generation. Our prison system is in crisis. So we have to bear down on this, but we have a mountain to climb.
So, speaking to Kate McCann on Times Radio Breakfast earlier, the Shadow Justice Secretary, Robert Jenrick, of course, he was asked if the inheritance left by the last Conservative government was to blame for the pressure on the prison service.
This is not an easy problem to fix. But I dispute the fact that this is primarily about resources, because the number of releases is lower today.
Okay, so
If I may just finish the point, Kate. And yet, the number of people being
You've made that point repeatedly, but I'm asking you a different question, which is the lack of resourcing over a number of years. You don't think that's got anything to do with this?
Well, I don't know. We shall find out. We don't know all the circumstances behind these releases. David Lammy has, we're told, commissioned an independent review, so we will learn more. But the issue here seems to me to be one of serious failure by the management, the operation of the system, which is about how our individual prisons are operating. And what is the Ministry of Justice itself doing, a department with thousands of civil servants who should be managing it and clearly are failing to do so? Is the prison service, though, under immense pressure and strain? Yes, it is. We should be building more prisons. I've been clearer about that. We should build more prisons and we should be resourcing them properly.
That's the Shadow Justice Secretary, Robert Jenrick, talking to Kate McCann. So let's welcome now to the programme Oliver Wright, the Times Policy Editor. Welcome, Ollie.
Afternoon.
Hi. So look, we've seen that one of those wrongly released prisoners has handed himself in, Bill Smith, which sort of underlines the fact that he got out thanks to the prison service in the first place. But what about, because I'm going to come to the state of the prison service, but what about where we are with David Lammy? What are you thinking about that? He didn't create the problems in the prison service, but he got himself into a hole yesterday and then dug himself in deeper.
Yeah, he got himself into a horrible hole. I mean, his excuse today is that he didn't have all the facts on him when he took part in PMQ